Everybody has other things to do today, so we're going to move ahead and start to let Representative Lanning introduce a bill on a legislative proposal, and some people are here to give us a little background on that. So, Representative Lanning, if you want to tell us about your H.R. 77.
You bet. Well, good morning to all of you. And the community supports a work group that I have been working with has been meeting, talking about some specific legislative initiatives that might be undertaken in order to advance the recommendations from the Commission Out of Poverty. And wait here until a couple of Senator Marty's arriving.
And we do have a quorum now present, so we're good to go.
Well, as I started to say, that the community supports work group that I've been working with has been discussing several different possible legislative initiatives that might be undertaken this session to carry forward recommendations that come out of the Commission to End Poverty. And House File 77, and we have for commission members, did you, is it in the?
Yep, it's in the folder.
Oh, it's in the folder, okay.
Okay.
Morning, Senator.
Morning, sorry, I'm late.
House File 77 has three provisions that came out of the Community Supports Work Group. And we have some folks who worked with us on this that are here to talk about their piece of it. And the first person is Mary Ackerman from the Search Institute. And if you could join us up here at the table, I don't think we need to have you go way back there. It'd be better for you to be here. But the Search Institute has been very, very helpful to us in looking at some of this. The commission report specifically singled out the Search Institute and their work, and so they are part of this legislation that we've brought forward. So, Ms. Ackerman, would you?
I'd be glad to. Mary Ackerman again from Minneapolis Search Institute. The part of the bill that we are most interested in is a community strengthening project. We've piloted this approach before where we've encouraged communities to strengthen their ongoing collaborations or initiatives by giving them very small little grants that help pull the community members together around a common vision. The nice part about the bill now is that Search Institute has also been working for several years around some research to actually measure impact of community strengthening initiatives. So this bill includes something called Assets GTO, Getting to Outcomes, which is a Search Institute and RAND Corporation project that actually can measure impact of community strengthening. So our approach to poverty reduction would be to work with communities on a case-by-case basis to find their strengths, bring those programs, agencies, could be the faith community, mayor's office, bring those partners together in a collaborative effort toward stronger children, families, and community. And we also have, we hope, a wonderful partner in the Minnesota Alliance with Youth. And many of you know that organization as the Minnesota statewide organization that brings Promise Fellows into community and school development, specifically to bring partnerships around community and schools to prevent dropout. The initiative, the Alliance with Youth, is just in the process today and Monday of going to the feds for an increased number of Promise Fellows. We currently have 70 to 90 fellows in Minnesota. We're one of the best programs in the country around using Promise Fellows in schools and communities, and we've been encouraged to increase that number and apply for 300, which would mean that we might be able to have teams of Promise Fellows working in places all across the state, and we're working very hard to identify the highest need communities that might benefit by having a cluster of Promise Fellows. So our work with several collaboratives, Search Institute, the Minnesota Alliance with Youth, Assets GTO, I think can bring a really strong initiative into this work for poverty reduction. I'd be glad to answer questions.
Task force members have questions of Ms. Ackerman. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Representative Lanning. And Ms. Ackerman, I'm thinking of in my particular county, Rice County in Faribault, where I think we did have, and I worked with an organization years ago, Organization for a Better Rice County, which is no longer there. And I'm not even sure that there is a poverty organization existing. But there certainly is poverty in that, you know, and our churches also, you know, have sort of picked it up more. But, but I still see a need for I mean, you know, 300 fellows. I could use a couple of those.
Exactly.
You know, and I my mind is going back to, you know, 20, 30 years ago or even 40, where we did identify poverty, and one of the areas that we did this was through the schools.
Right.
And this is when the children who received free and reduced lunches had red tickets.
Right.
And the rest of the kids had a regular ticket, and that was something that we, you know, I mean, it happened, and we identified it and we corrected it through just a small group of people. So those are, you know, it sounds very basic needs, and but those are the kinds of things that I still confront in my district.
I'm sure you do. And I think the hope with this kind of a program where we would take a community-based approach would be to first start in Faribault and find out who's doing. What are you doing? Who they won't have a title maybe around poverty. It might be something altogether like dropout prevention. Mm-hmm. But to gather all of those various initiatives and have them be thinking in one strong initiative toward poverty reduction. And for many folks, they're working in something like dropout prevention. They don't label it poverty. All we need to do is just ratchet up the attention a little bit, and it will become something that the community can focus on. And that also brings community members into those working groups and volunteers that might not do that. So the hope would be that we go into each community, listen really hard for who's doing what, bring them together around this topic, and then watch good stuff happen. Document it so that it can be replicated, because if Faribault does something wonderful, Grand Rapids needs it. So we shouldn't have to recreate the wheel.
And, to that, Ms. Ackerman, as I'm thinking, because in our town now we have St. Vincent de Paul,
right?
We have Salvation Army. We have all of these entities that are wonderful that are there. So obviously there's a need, but my concern too is because you know rural poverty is different in some respects because of the dignity issue. You know, people will be poorer out in rural Minnesota and frugal about that, so I like the term out of poverty. You know, a hand up and a hand out of poverty.
Yep.
And that's sort of what I'm thinking. You know, you can go and get a handout at the Salvation Army or the soup kitchen, and that'll get you a meal or some clothing. But that doesn't get you out of poverty. And so that's my concern, that we would have an organization in the state like we are proposing to do. And is that where you're coming
from? We would be part of it. But as you hear some of the other testimony today from some of our other partners on this particular task force, I think you'll like what you hear.
Senator Marty.
Just, Mr. Chairman, a quick question about in the legislation you talk about 10 interested communities getting grants for community mobilization initiatives and then 8 strong community innovation grants. I was just curious, is one of them just to get people started in these conversations, the other one to help those existing groups with innovation, whatever?
Yes, because we do have strong initiatives going across the state. But we know that there are other communities that really are struggling and that have not had any small amount of funding to gather and do their own vision and you know, see what they can do. The innovations are for places like a Northfield or Duluth, where they've had strong initiatives, but they, with a little bit of excitement and attention and visibility on what they're doing, they might come up with some great new answers.
So, Mr. Chairman, the first of those 10 grants are to get people started, bring people
coalesce.
Together, and the 8 are for those already doing stuff to try new things.
Ratchet up. Yep.
Any other questions for Ms. Ackerman? Representative Szymanski, welcome.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm late.
Yeah. Well, everybody was a little late because we had to find the new meeting room here. So.
I did take the hike up to the second floor.
Yeah, sorry about that. Those things happen sometimes. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Ackerman. She's been a joy and pleasure to work with in developing this. And the partners we've had, the work group has had here, have done a phenomenal job in a very short period of time trying to help us frame some language that we could bring forward. And so we want to thank them for that work. Thank you.
It's been great.
And the next person who would speak to another section of this is Maureen Kenny from Northern Connections.
Good morning.
Good morning. You want to talk about this section of the legislation?
Sure, certainly. I brought the pieces of information that I brought prior in case anyone hasn't received them. So I will pass that around. It's just a one-page sheet on Northern Connections. I also have more information, but I'll wait until someone asks for the more information. I'm Maureen Kenny, the executive director. Northern Connections is located in Perm, Minnesota, and we serve 12 counties in west central Minnesota. We assist people coming off cash assistance programs, essentially to help them stay off cash assistance programs. What's unique about our program is we are long-term support. We don't have any term limits. We partner with these individuals when they're coming off these programs and invite them to establish a relationship with us for the long term so that when they need support related to job retention, reemployment, career advancement, asset accumulation, we're there to help them find resources in the community, talk through issues, counsel them to not potentially quit their job until we have helped them to find another one. Help them with first-time home buyer, help them with earned income tax credits. Whatever they need at a particular moment in their life, we're there for them. We establish goals with all of our individuals so that we have an expectation that they're going to work with us to create a path to get on a secure financial path so that they're not relying on public assistance programs, public assistance dollars. Another area that we're unique is we do all of our counseling and coaching over the telephone, which makes us very cost effective. We can serve a 12-county area from a corner office in downtown Perham, Minnesota. I have 3 council representatives that serve right now 553 individuals across 12 counties. We are available Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 9 to 4 on Saturday, which is times that are more accessible for the individuals that we serve. And as I've mentioned before, our model eliminates some of the barriers that happen in all programs, but particularly in rural Minnesota, and that's transportation and childcare. People don't need to spend hours to drive to us to talk to a counselor representative. It's immediate. It's a phone call. I think Representative Lanning has done a great job in portraying our organization. I know that he's been certainly an advocate for us, so I guess I'll turn it over for questions at this point. I could go on for hours, but respecting the time.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Kenny, when you presented the same thing, well, one of these previous meetings, and I was just curious, I think you're right that doing things by telephone and presumably internet for people to follow up and you to give resources and so that makes a lot of sense. And I'm just curious, are there other organizations like this that are providing similar services that are strictly telephone instead of walk-in or whatever? I mean, I think you're right that it's a lot more efficient way for people to do things, especially in, well, any part of the state.
Right.
Does anybody else do this, or are you unique that way?
I believe we're unique in that way. I mean, there's a lot of agencies and organizations out there that are a phone call. I mean, United Way, 211. We are the only organization that's really focused on those four areas of growth, of job retention, reemployment, asset accumulation, and career advancement, really helping people in that employment issue and to help them get on a financial path. We partner. We are in many collaboratives up in our West Central Minnesota area. So we partner with a lot of the local county and social service agencies so that we're aware of all the resources available. So beyond that sort of job coaching, we're able to tell people about food support programs, about backpack programs, those sort of things. As far as I know, we're unique in Minnesota, and the other organization that we're replicated from is out in North Carolina, Connect Inc. in North Carolina, and they've been very successful in their 10 years of programs. I forget how many counties they're serving across North Carolina. They have a different model. The counties actually pay for their services as well as some state funding. But as far as I know, we're the only two in the United States who are doing this specifically around that workforce sort of model in addition to other resources. And that has to do with the very capable staff that we have. We have counselors. We have psychologists. We have workforce development experienced people on our team. So they know those resources. They know how to help people to face these situations.
Any other questions? The goal here of this provision is to enable other parts of the state to do the same thing that's being done in these 12 counties. That has already proven to be a successful approach to helping people work their way out of poverty and not go back on the welfare rolls as so often is the case in many other places. And so that's the goal here, to give a collection of counties or area that would be able to do this kind of thing. Representative Shemansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, may I ask one question? Of the residents in these 12 counties that are coming off of, social assistance programs, how many are you reaching? Are you reaching 100% of them on initial contact, or how many stay with your program?
And I could get you more accurate data, but off the top of my head, every month, we receive a list of individuals who have come off those programs. It sometimes takes us on average, four to six months to get a hold of them. We maybe be able to leave a message for them, but to get them to return a phone call to us, a lot of times they think we're telemarketers. We're trying to sell them something or we're a bill collector. So there is a time delay. There are some people that right away are willing to work with us, but there is some time delay. But when you look at sort of the bigger picture, I believe our rate is we're able to get a hold of about 60%, but once we do, we have like an 87% to 90% success rate in that people will work with us once we get a hold of them. So we are trying to figure out how can we get a hold of people better? What is it going to take? And what we start out with is the directors of the county social service programs is the author of the initial letter in 9 of our 12 counties, basically saying, we understand you're going off our program. This organization is wanting to partner with you and work with you so that at least they're expecting our call. I think we need to come up with ways to look at that differently and see how we might be able to increase that success rate. But once we get a hold of them and explain, we're not asking for anything except to partner with them.
Great.
Senator Martin?
Mr. Chair, on that point, I think it sounds like yeah, what I encourage you to do is to try and work with the counties, not just a letter when they're leaving, but, I mean, actually more aggressively push them your way because you shouldn't be having to waste time trying to reach people. And then I'm sure if I got a call, I think telemarketing. Yeah, what's your scheme?
Sure.
What's your purpose?
People aren't used to getting that over the telephone. Yeah. And one of our challenges also, if I may add, is the information that we get from the state isn't always current. So there's a bit of tracking a person as well. So, but yeah.
And maybe you could say something about the kind of cooperation you've gotten from social service agencies in the counties involved.
What I think is a tremendous asset to this organization is how it really has come together as a collaborative. It started from a collaborative. West Central Initiative was very involved at the start to get this going, but it really came from a voice of the local social service agencies knowing that something had to happen. When people lose that support, when they go off these cash assistance programs, there's a huge gap in terms of the support and their ability to stay on track and not end up back on some sort of county or social service program. Our board is representative of primarily those 12 counties, social service agencies. Many of our board members are executive directors of nonprofits or with the CAP agencies or social service organizations. So there's a common voice, so we get to know what's going on in that 12-county area, because that's an enormous territory to cover with four staff. But the board comes and brings those issues to the table, and then we're involved in numerous collaboratives and committees to get to know what the economic conditions are of the areas, what are the particular challenges. And there are some differences by counties, what the particular challenges are. And I really believe this is a model that could be replicated in other rural areas of Minnesota and prove to be very effective.
Well, if there are no other questions, thank you very much, Ms. Kenny.
Thank you very much.
The third section of this bill talks about circles of support, and we have a couple of people. I think if we have both of them come forward, Mr. Bell and Ms. Morin, you come forward and Mr. Bell is with Circles of Support from Community Action of Duluth, and Ms. Morin is Circles of Support, it's called Kutaska?
Kutaska.
Kutaska, yes. Community Action. So welcome.
Yes.
Thank you
and,
very much.
And both of them have been involved with our work group and helping to frame some language here, and we appreciate their good work in a very short time frame to help us put something together. So I don't know who wants to go first, but
flip for it.
Flip point, whatever.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And my name is Alice Morin, and I'm actually the director of Circles of Support Itasca County. And I'm also representing Kutaska Community Action, as our process was born in Community Action, and we're just now coming into our own community-owned process through the development of our own nonprofit. Circles of Support, obviously, is a process I believe in deeply. On an individual level, it helps people connect to their belief in self, and the process itself connects people in poverty with people who are not in poverty. So we help people. Those friendships help people increase their income, their education, and their belief that someday they can live a life with poverty not in it. One of our greatest assets is on the community level and changing the way that communities think about poverty. Because as long as communities continue to believe that it's only a government responsibility, things aren't going to change in the way that they could. The Circles model specifically promotes the utilization of private sector resources to help people meet their goals, and we intentionally focus on the resources that we have in our community that maybe we don't always look at to help us with the work that we're doing. We believe that people don't need to rely on the human service system for friendship. But oftentimes people in poverty are so isolated that that becomes their only connection. And we really enforce the belief of helping people help themselves. Sometimes people just get disconnected from their strengths and forget what they can do for themselves. And, yeah, there was my spiel to start with. X, well, I'll let you
there's,
start into that.
I think Alice said it eloquently, is that when you're in poverty, you're isolated. If you imagine the height of Katrina and you imagine all those people that are standing in the Superdome, that's poverty. And it's on a broad scale. We can talk about whose fault it is. We can talk about the personal responsibility that individuals have. We can talk about the social responsibility that individuals have. But at the end of the day, that's a word picture that I'd like to imprint on your mind. Circles. What we do is we bridge some gaps. We bring together individuals who have never experienced poverty and individuals who have to talk about and find solutions to the problems that our communities are having. So it is a high-impact strategy that really allows for communities to understand what poverty is, gain some insight on how people can be personally responsible to move away from that, and then offer some insight on how society can provide new resources to address the issues that people in poverty are experiencing in their own community. One of the most unique things about this model is that it generates energy and creative ideas, local resources to address the issues holistically, collectively. For example, I originally moved out to Minnesota this is my sixth winter. I measure that by winters, especially today. And I realized very quickly that hockey is a big, big deal in Minnesota. And I was driving, actually, to do a training with Alice, and I was listening to a hockey game for the first time. And I realized that if a community can embrace a sport, then is there a way that we can challenge a community to embrace being able to do something about a systemic issue, a social concern? And so what we decided to do in our community in Duluth is to create a process of community engagement called Pucks Against Poverty. And what we're doing is bringing the community together in a weird fashion. We're collecting used pucks and decorating them and sending people out to educate other people and bringing in resources and to highlight the concerns of the working poor, which are the people that we work with. We've heard from our partners that there's a tier. And what we're trying to do is avoid people from falling backwards and pulling people out. That's what we're doing. And we took this dynamic of hockey, and we've began to challenge the community to engage in something to make people aware. Last week, I got a call from a group of individuals in Duluth who have taken this initiative and they're running with it and they're owning it and they're trying to do something about an issue. That's bringing new resources, new energy, new dynamics to a situation that's impacting our community. But it's out of the box. And I think in order to address the problems that we have, socioeconomic deprivation, those aspects of systemic social racism, those aspects of isolation, we're going to really have to be creative. And Circles has done that and continues to do that. We're seeing unbelievable outcomes related to this process.
Questions?
Go ahead.
Did you have something for
me? I just wanted to add that the friendship piece over the long term is really the catalyst for community change. The piece where people who are not in poverty are now learning what life is like for their friend versus those people out there. It makes it personal to understand what it's like for their children to go to school and not have the resources that they need because they're getting that direct information, or to understand what it looks like, what it feels like, and how it plays out in their community when their friend just lost their general assistance medical care coverage, what that means to someone. So it really personalizes the process, and that's what increases the private sector resource, because people are willing to contribute more in terms of time, materials, and dollars when it's for their friends, when it brings it close to home.
And it demystifies it. It answers the questions that, if you haven't experienced poverty, it's really hard to understand what it is. And I think what ends up happening in one of our status quos is that we implement policies and procedures that we really never engage the people who are experiencing the problem to consider. And what we're doing is we're bringing in individuals who are experiencing the problem, individuals who have been establishing policies together to really think through what our next steps should be to solve the issues in our community. That's wisdom. That's wise, in my opinion. And we're seeing the impact of that in our community.
Senator Marty?
Mr. Chair, I think those of us who visited some of the Circles programs with the Poverty Commission were very impressed, and I think you're right. You can really see how the friends on both the low-income ones and the partners who are working with them, how close they become and how they believe in each other a lot. So, question is, I remember visiting one in southern Minnesota. I think we visited the Grand Rapids one and so on. How many of these are there, and are they all currently community action funded, or... In Minnesota that you're aware of?
Yeah. The goal is to answer the question directly. Initially, when we started our model, there were five of us that started here locally. We duplicated the model through a process called Beyond Welfare in Iowa. And we brought it into Minnesota. We've been working it ever since. What Kotaska Community Action and ourselves, what we've been doing in Duluth is really morphing it into a process that can be sustainable, because it took a while for us to really turn this from a pilot program into a viable program, and in particular, identifying resources that would support the work that we're doing, because it's a little out of the box, you know? You haven't caught on to that yet. And it's allowed for us over the past 5 years to really embed it within our two existing communities. We look to broaden it over the next couple of years. So we've been providing trainings to other communities. As far as Philadelphia, we've had people fly in from Philadelphia, from Iowa, we've gone around the country over the last 2 years to be involved in social service conferences and broad conferences throughout the Community Action Network and abroad. And our goal is to utilize the strength of an existing infrastructure, community action agencies, and morph it into where Alice has mentioned she's moving towards, into something that's owned and engaged by the community. Again, it's developing new ideas, new resources, so that you can bring volunteers, individuals in the community to address the issue, instead of just isolating people continually by sending them back to a place where they're receiving services, and that's a challenge. I don't personally think it's working, and so we're trying to change the way in which we're doing business.
Any other questions? If not, thank you very much, and thanks for your work on getting this put together, and appreciate. Good work that Circles of Support does around the state.
Thank you very much.
well, members, as a task force, our charge is to identify initiatives that would help us achieve our goal of eliminating poverty. And we're not a regular committee, so this is not a hearing in the normal sense of legislative hearings. And we put this bill together and secured support for from the chair of the House Human Services Committee. This bill will get heard, and hopefully will be a part probably of the omnibus bill coming out of the House Human Services Committee. And I guess, you know, to what extent the task force as a group wants to help advance that or encourage consideration of this bill, that's an open question for you. But we wanted to give you that that background and that history on this. So that's a question before you, I guess.
Well, I guess, thank you, Representative. I guess the representative brings a good point that as we bring forth legislation, we can't stop there, so we need all you to kind of go out in the communities and get people to start developing that grassroots support, calling their representatives and their state senators in order to say we need to advance these bills. There's good things coming out of there. And as well, you know, starting with the commission to end poverty and then moving with the ladder out of poverty, we don't want to see this work end. So if we don't pass legislation or if we don't move things even in increments, then our work goes for naught, and we don't – none of us in this room for sure don't want to see that, nor do past members of the commission. So, you know, moving from the support, the community building, the relationship building, was good points on relationships. You can't move anybody forward from anything just by sending them to somebody behind a desk that can give them something in terms of service. We need those developing those relationships out in the communities. But we also – the next item is I was part of the asset working group, and keys to falling back as we build those relationships and make sure people don't fall backwards. We also talked a lot about building assets and removing some of those barriers to building assets, because if you take everybody's assets away, make them spend down their assets in order to qualify for a program, it's that much bigger a leap it takes to move forward the next time and get back on your feet. So that's one of the things we talked about in the Asset Development Working Group, and we've got Ron Elwood to come up and talk to us. You can come up to the table here, Ron. You know, we like you.
I'm used to going over here.
Yes. In a normal hearing, we do sit everybody down at the end there, but as Representative Lanning said, this isn't a normal hearing, and I do have to escape at 11 o'clock, so I think we'll have most of our work done, but just so if you guys see me get up and move, it's not because I don't like you. It's because I'm working on other issues as well that I couldn't schedule around. So Ron, if you can kind of bring us up to speed on what we were working on in the Asset Development Group, that would be great.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. We've the Asset Development Working Group discussed a variety of things, and we've come forward with two pieces of proposed legislation, and I think we will be continuing to discuss one or two other things that are not quite ready for prime time yet, but we'll work on those. First of all, would involve the Department of Commerce, and I was remiss in not providing any of this information to Deputy Commissioner Murphy prior to today. So, sorry, Kevin. we'll need to obviously talk with.
As long as you're not cutting his budget, I'm sure that probably.
No, but I always like to make more work for him because I just not sure he's really doing enough over there. But because I know he doesn't have a whole lot to do these days, and so. I've worked with Deputy Commissioner for many, many years, and have the utmost respect for him, and I know the. Difficulty of the job he does and the vast amount of the scope under his span of control. So it's I know any additional things are difficult, but this shouldn't be too big of a deal. And but I think so the two ideas, the first comes from some writings that have been put out there and ideas that have been generated from think tanks around the country that are working on this asset development strategy. And, we could have come forward with any number of ideas that have been put forward, but there were two constraints, obviously, first one being budgetary. And a lot of the really good ideas, for example, the development of children's savings accounts. A fantastic idea, universally applauded. I mean, there's really very little, if I've never even heard any adverse comments on developing such a program. But, you know, that is strictly a fiscal issue, and certainly this is, let's say it's the right idea at the wrong time. So, you know, but it's not going to become a bad idea later. It's just we'll see how when the state is in a better position, maybe we can bring something like that forward. So again, the two ideas are really based on the understanding of where we are with the budget, and also things that at the same time I think would advance the ball in this issue. So the first one is an idea to develop a financial planning, you know, advisors corps of current and retired financial planners, and try to connect those folks with low-income people who otherwise would be unable to afford to pay for those kinds of services. Now, this isn't credit counseling. That's different. You know, just because you're poor doesn't mean you shouldn't be setting up a long-term financial plan for yourself. It's just that folks who are of limited means don't have the ability to access the experts in the financial advisor field to provide that kind of advice and create a strategy and look at these, you know, individual situations and put forward a long-term plan for that particular family. So this is simply an idea of asking the Commissioner of Commerce to bring together the Financial Planning Association and the Minnesota Association of Volunteer Administration and anyone else, any other organizations Commissioner might see as valuable, and try to just kind of spawn this thing and then have it go off on its own. It could be within the department, or it could be housed somewhere else at the association or anywhere else. So it's just to sort of get that discussion started, see if there can be an opportunity to develop a core of volunteers in the financial planning field to connect those folks with low-income families and start developing folks' portfolios.
Question about that?
Representative Lenny.
Question, Mr. Elwood. Mm-hmm. Is there any organized pro bono kind of financial planning assistance offered now anywhere? I've not heard of such a thing. Is there anything that's...
Mr. Chair and members, I don't believe so. I've never heard of it either. And I think that's kind of the idea that that's what we're going to create. I mean, we have lawyers that do that. Mm-hmm. We have accountants that do that with Accountability Minnesota and others who volunteer their time to help people fill out their tax returns. But
I don't mean to interrupt you, but we do have financial planning volunteers who work with us too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Well, great. So there's the kernel of the idea, and perhaps we can grow that and make it more of a formalized kind of thing that can connect to more people. Of course, the reality is what do you serve, about 10,000, 12,000 people?
Yeah, in terms
and
of
members, this is Accountability Minnesota.
So. Yeah.
Sorry, Jesse Fishman.
You know, but of course there are many, many more folks out there who, you know, for one reason or another, don't find their way to that particular organization, and we could grow this. So that's the first one. Any other questions? The second, yes.
Senator Hardy. With that, because I'm not entirely clear in my head, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Elwood, so, like Accountability Minnesota, your main function, well, I shouldn't say what your main function is, but you provide accountants who do the tax preparation stuff, which is a fairly extensive thing. And that's statewide with people. We have people who help with tax preparation, I know. But in other words, financial planning, your organization does some, but nobody else has a similar thing for it. And your goal would be to get the commissioner to initially explore how we could either through nonprofits or through the state or somewhere get people to volunteer in this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Moore, that's exactly right. And, you know, it could be housed anywhere. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a question of getting that. I think the commissioner's role is simply to be to be a convener. And then, you know, I mean, I don't – it probably – and frankly, it probably would – the wouldn't make too much sense actually to house it at the department, frankly. It probably belongs, you know, somewhere else. But I think, you know, we just – in order to get that thing going and just bring the parties together there's a, if I'm not mistaken, Deputy Commissioner, there's a some role that the department plays with financial planning. I think there's a small statute that's under your purview.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Elwood, not in my immediate division. It might be elsewhere.
Okay. I'm not. Well, I know there's a statute that is within the statutes that under your purview. Maybe you don't specifically work. I mean, I don't think there's any license or anything like that. But
and Representative Chemanski, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just having a little bit of experience in the field years back. You know, I think if we talk to the financial planning industry and the insurance advisors, that you know, they may be willing participants. I know I've you know, counseled several clients that, you know, with marginal income, and you know, help to educate them in the process of accumulating savings. So I think the professional force out there would be willing to cooperate as well.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Chemanski, we can count on you to strong arm your friends. Is that what you're telling us? Thank you.
My arms are getting weak. So, yes, I will help in any way. Yeah.
Thank you. So the second idea. Actually, is an idea that came to us as a result of just observing what Accountability Minnesota has been able to accomplish in terms of connecting recipients of the Earned Income Tax Credit with mainstream financial institutions and having bank accounts open and the refunds deposited directly into those accounts. You know, again, you know, Accountability and the other folks who do that kind of work reach a lot of people but don't reach everybody. And so the idea, therefore, is to ask the Commissioner of Revenue to work with depository institutions to see if we can't do a parallel kind of effort and get bank accounts open for recipients of the Minnesota Working Family Tax Credit. And so this would be, again, the kind of thing where the commissioner would just kind of, you know, call together the credit unions and the independent bankers and the major banks and, you know, see if there's a way that there can be some linkages between the recipients, because now the department knows exactly who's getting these refunds, obviously, and is there a way to sort of connect those folks who are unbanked to the financial institutions and essentially do what Accountability Minnesota is doing on the Earned Income Tax Credit side for those who are receiving the Working Family Tax Credits and who otherwise aren't being served by the nonprofit and who doesn't have that opportunity to connect with a bank. And that's the long and short of this proposal.
Questions?
Question, yeah.
President Lanning.
Mr. Elwood, would we need any enabling legislation to do either of these things, or are they basically administrative where the departments could take this on? So it would be a suggestion that would be forwarded to them. Is that?
Mr. Chair, you really don't need enabling legislation. I think what we were attempting to do here, you know, we wanted to have some things that are products of this task force for the session. Mm-hmm. And given the fact that many of the other good ideas really were involved money, and, you know, understanding that, you know, the one fiscal ask that we're going to make is on the community support side, it seemed to us that for this session, to at least you know, show some momentum and generate some ideas that we would do it in this way. But short answer to your question is no, the agencies could certainly do it on their own if they wanted. But again, you know, we do this a lot, and we ask the agency to do this or that or the other thing that, you know, that they could do on their own anyway. But it's really sort of a signal from the legislature that this is, you know, coming out of this process, and we ask the agencies to do it. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm certainly sensitive to the workload that the agencies have, and, you know, we see the proposal, you know, the other day that potentially workforce might be cut. And so, you know, there are these cross tensions that are at work this session. There's no question about it. But, you know, again, the goal was to walk those tricky lines and to try to not create a tremendously burdensome request that, regardless of workforce numbers, this is something that you know, probably regardless of where they're at in staffing, you know, certainly could be done over the next year or so. So that's the idea.
I think to members, I've used that as a tool in my tenure here, is to draft some things and you're kind of fishing, I guess, if you call it a fishing expedition, but actually gotten the agencies to work through that without having to pass the legislation. So I think it is a good tool to bring some things forward, get it out there in the legislature so we get those discussions going, and then get agreement from agencies that you don't necessarily have to pass the bill. I think we have a lot of things on the books we don't need there, and I'm fine to work through and introduce things to get that discussion going, and if we can get agency buy-in to just not have to move the bills any further. Senator Marty.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I had the same thought as Representative Lanning, and you obviously have as well. And introducing this is fine, but I will suggest, and I had actually written my note, was ask Ron Elwood to draft a letter to the governor and the commissioners, and then we as a task force sign the letter, send it to him. And I think I just met the revenue commissioner, had a meeting with him yesterday, and I think it's the kind of thing that if we send a letter and approach him, I think there'd be a good chance of making it happen, and happen our part of it happen quickly. I mean, theirs, they may wait till, I mean, they're all getting their feet on the ground now, but 6 months from now or something, where they might, both of these things are things that I think there'd be a lot of interest in among not just this task force, but also among others in the state. So I think we should do it that way. We can drop in the bills if you want, but I think it'd be most useful if you draft some letters that the task force could consider.
That would be a possible course of action here at this point, yes. Any other questions for Mr. Elwood? Representative Fritz.
I just want to thank you, Mr. Elwood, and for working with us on this. But I do want to also say that I hope that, because I am a co-author on House File 77, and I do want that dropped in, because I do think the messaging of this is important for our fellow legislators as well as getting it to the commissioners. But I do think that the messaging, you know, this is such good information, and that statewide. So I would be happy to continue to sign on to legislation that would message, but also want to get it enacted, you know, the savings account and those sorts of things. It seems like a very small baby step in the right direction, but for, you know, really, it's I look back again in my history and looking at nursing home workers where I worked, and we finally had a 401k, and they actually contributed to it and used that and borrowed off of it for their children's education and health care. So the need is tremendous. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And Ms. Chair, members, just if you just give me direction how you want to go, if you want to bill draft it just for the sake of the, you know, the putting it out there, and then you wanted a letter, and you know, and the bill just sits there, and you want use the letter, or you just want to do the letter. Just tell me what you want to do, and I'll be delighted to do whatever you want to do.
I would be happy to sign a letter that would go to the administration, and Senator Jungbauer isn't here right now, but it would be appropriate then if he's willing to do the same. And so, we could do that.
I'll suggest that he draft letters for the chairs and the task force to take a look at and can edit them as feel necessary. And then maybe if we get some interest from them, maybe at a later meeting, I don't remember, I saw listing when we're meeting, but maybe some later meeting, maybe after session or something, we invite the commissioners to come follow up and actually come to the task force.
Good. Is there any objection from the task force that we draft a letter that the two chairs, co-chairs, can send to the administration about this? Any objection to that?
No.
Let's put in the minutes then, you know, that that's what by consensus we decided to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next is to get an update from the Financial Education Working Group. And we have a couple of folks who are going to present for us. Andrea Furstan from the Greater Twin Cities United Way and Trish Olson from the University of Minnesota Extension. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. So just a couple quick updates. One, I wanted to let everyone know that the Financial Education Work Group has been working hard to develop a plan for financial education in the state, how to take some of this work and bring it together, coordinate it in a meaningful way, and take it to scale. And so we're fortunate in that we have a national financial education plan that came out of the Department of Treasury. And so we took that plan and we looked at it and how we're going to adapt that and really build off of that for Minnesota. And right now that's going out to the task force members hopefully later today, and really get them to focus in on a few of the strategies and identify kind of scope of need, what's being done, and kind of where the opportunity is, so that we can, as we move forward into next year, really identify key opportunities in terms of a legislative opportunity as well as other opportunities as well. So that's really where that work is. And then I also want to just quickly update the group that we have been approached by Denise Devon, who is heading a national effort. It's called National Asset Initiative, and that's out of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And that just started, I want to say, maybe 2 months ago, and Minnesota has been asked, it's part of Region 5, to submit a statewide plan around assets, financial education, EITC, free tax prep, all that falls under essentially the scope of ladders. And so we have worked together with a number of the stakeholders in this room and outside of this room to put together a draft plan. The final plan is due end of February. And it's really based on a lot of the work that's come out of these working groups. And I think just even having the ladders task force, you know, identified as a kind of key stakeholder in this work is helping to position Minnesota and may ultimately help leverage leverage some national funding as well for assets and other opportunities. So just wanted everyone to be aware of that.
Good. Thank you.
So?
Questions? Do you envision that there will be some draft legislation that that you think we ought to be considering?
Not the session other than what Ron mentioned,
okay.
But I do think that there will be opportunities down the road both for legislation as well as looking at other opportunities for really using, you know, exploring and using political capital to shape some things as well.
Okay.
Also, at the beginning of our, when we started to meet, there was a lot of attention given to the social studies standards. Financial literacy is a life course event, youth to elderly. And we spent quite a bit of time discussing how the social studies standards that are being worked on in the Department of Education, discussion about financial literacy components in that. So we put quite a bit of attention initially on that, and we know that group is moving ahead independently. Financial literacy intermingles with all aspects of our life in the Department of Education. That work is important, too, and we'll move ahead this agenda in addition to what we do within this task force.
Mm-hmm. But do you feel as though adequate attention is being paid in the rewriting of the social studies standards to deal with this issue, or is there work yet to do?
Well, The committee is being formed, or I think has been formed, and a number of people through the discussions in the latter's group really identify key stakeholders who could be submitting and nominating those names so that we'd have some of that, you know, that voice on the mm-hmm. committee looking at the social okay. studies standards from that perspective. So I think that was a very good outcome. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that research was then shared around kind of what other states are doing in this arena to address, you know, make sure that financial education is embedded in the social studies standards. And the committee also, or the work group also spent time looking at how other states have structured that outside of the social studies standards, but we've agreed to pause and see first where we end up with the updated standards to see whether we'd want to go down that alternative path, which would be a separate financial education requirement for the schools.
Well, as someone who is trained as a social studies teacher, I obviously have a keen interest in this, and I hope you keep us posted as to how that's progressing and whether it's progressing adequately or not, so that if we wish to weigh in, we have a chance to do that. Okay. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I actually think this is very, this is a very short part of the agenda today and very brief and just kind of a here's what's happening. I think it is a success that the task force is people you're helping shape the social studies standards, and I guess I think right now we're waiting and seeing. That's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah.
And so, and if they shape it in such a way that this becomes a part of the standards, I think that'll be tremendous for that. The adult financial education, though, the other half of it, or I don't know how you measure halves, but the other portion of it, I didn't quite get the thing you're preparing for the national thing. That's a plan that we submit for. Is there federal money or support for it, or what's the outcome of that? And in terms of your efforts to try and push financial education and for adults, I don't know that you are giving a report to this group at some point, but when is whoever's working on that going to have their ideas and their thoughts, and what's going to happen next with that?
Well, we certainly can share the plan that's being submitted, so I can send that out electronically. We're building in just kind of tentative timelines at this point, and there are a couple funding streams that we're expecting to open up very soon that we will be pursuing, geared around IDAs that are inclusive of, well, we hope, I know one of them is inclusive of financial education, the other one we'll see. And so some of that work, the funding will be opening up soon. Some is about identifying kind of what we could be leveraging and then, you know, positioning that with the federal government and hoping that some of that does open up other opportunities down the road. So I'd be happy. Amy's been a part of that that group as well, Ms. Brennigan, and I'd be happy to share that report with that group so that there could be a sense of kind of the scope and how all that work lines up.
Senator?
That would be helpful if you keep the task force informed on that and so on. But again, when I hear you're doing it related to these various funding streams in the asset program that Denise Devon used to work with or still does work with and so on, all those programs, I mean, they touch a few dozen people here and a few others there, and I keep thinking how many people low-income or at risk for being low-income don't have a clue about a whole lot of this stuff. And if we've got, I mean, I would care to bet not just low-income people, but a whole range of adults who are very clueless about interest and how it stacks up against you and how credit cards and debit cards cause problems and even simple banking steps that we don't know. Is anybody looking, is in part of the process, both in applying for the federal proposal and so on, is somebody looking at the broad population and
yes.
just dreaming about how we might someday do this?
Absolutely. And I think there's a number of key strategies, both in the national plan as well as in the plan that we're putting together in the financial education group, that really talk about, you know, a few different things, how to bring kind of training to scale and integration and build that into, you know, state programs and nonprofit sector. You know, there are strategies around a public awareness campaign to really begin to incent people around, you know, getting some basic, you know, even if it's a financial counseling phone line, you know, to get people to actually make that first phone call. There's a number of strategies around how can we be better using technology, having, you know, a website not only around public awareness but also around accessing financial education online. So there are a number of things in there to look at how do we begin to serve people at greater scale but still have integrity and still have, you know, looking at things like the adoption of some core competencies and how do we do that as a state to make sure that all these different, you know, small efforts going on across the state by different providers are addressing it in a way that is achieving the kind of goals and outcomes that we want. And so what kind of entity do we need to have in place to kind of oversee all that work and the integrity of that work?
Yes,
if I might add, the financial education working group is one group that has really spent a lot of time getting a lot of varied players from a lot of different places at the table, and it's probably one of the most comprehensive groupings of people working on financial literacy in the state that we've had, and I think that's been another achievement of this group in particular because a lot of people are at the table, and it is a really comprehensive look at let's take financial education to everybody. So that's been a lot of this planning and legwork has been a real achievement that this group has accomplished. And when we were talking about it, there was some concern that we don't have a legislative proposal. And I said so many achievements have already happened with this group. So I really salute this organizing work that this group has done.
Yes, we've done a lot of mapping and listing of, you know, who is doing what, thinking about both where are the gaps, who are we missing, and also is there duplication. I often feel in financial literacy we can't do enough, and I'm not very often as concerned about that, but really looking at who might we be missing. And so we've done a lot of that organization and through a lifespan approach, so we spent a little bit of time at the beginning really thinking about the social studies standards, but also through the lifespan. And in the previous presentations, you can't hardly talk about community implications or asset without the financial literacy being a part embedded in that. So I think we all are collaborating within our work groups, too.
I would hope that all of us would be looking for opportunities for you folks to come before one of our committees and share some of what's been going on here, because it even if it's just for information only, I think that's important. It's going to we've got to get more people tuned into this issue very clearly.
And we can share both the plan and the mapping document so that you see, you know, who we've kind of have a sense of who's doing what and what yet can be done.
So maybe we can sort of keep an eye out here of opportunities in various committees for us to recommend chairs to have you come in.
Okay. Great. Be happy to do that.
Thank you very much for that work, and thanks to all of you who have been engaged along the way in any of these work groups. I've been really encouraged by the volunteers that have stepped forward and offered to help us try and figure some of these things out. So on behalf of the task force, we thank you very much. And for those of you that in the audience who haven't necessarily been involved in one of the work groups but have followed and have an interest in what we're doing, please feel free at any time to contact one of us about your ideas or concerns or whatever, so that we can put that as a part of our activity and concern as we go forward. We need to do a number of updates here before we adjourn. Ms. Brennigan, why don't you give an update from your perspective?
Sure, certainly. First, thank you everybody for coming out on this cold day. So many of you came from so far again, and we're grateful. And thanks to all the members of the task force for coming today. We're not scheduled to meet again as a task force until after session or until June, if session is over by then. So But the working groups will continue to meet, and thank you for the good work that you're doing in those working groups. I'm going to try to meet regularly with the leaders of those work groups and report back to members via email or one-on-one and in person. So please take that working group time. If you can carve it out of your schedule, it means a lot when we have task force members and community members at the table together. That makes these meetings go a lot more smoothly. I also just want to say thanks to Representative Szymanski and Senator Marty. Tomorrow they're going to be representing the task force with the Sisters of Carondelet at their annual conversation with legislators. Joan is here from that group. So thank you for hosting that, Joan, and also for you two for being there. Anyone is welcome to come to that. And the other piece is yesterday, Representative Lanning and I and Pam Johnson from Community Action met with the presidents of the Initiative Foundations about the work of the task force. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Representative? And that's
sure. At the last task force meeting, we talked about ways in which we could get more people engaged in this issue. And one of the ideas that I suggested was that we make a contact with the initiative funds that were set up by the McKnight Foundation in greater Minnesota. There are six of those funds. And yesterday we met with the executive directors. They're all independent funds. They're not directed by McKnight, but they're supported by McKnight. They're really six independent community foundations. And very simply, we asked them if they would consider helping us get communities around the state engaged in talking about the issue of poverty. And we specifically shared with them the bill that I outlined here earlier, and they could play a role in helping regions or communities to do some follow-up work here. And so we asked them if they would be willing to help get people engaged around the state, that they would host meetings of people who are on the front lines working with the people living in poverty, like was done up in West Central in our region. We had one of those back in December. And we found that to be a very helpful and successful event and helped get the word out, but also to get the general public engaged, because what Senator Marty will certainly recall, as I do from our work as a commission, how important we felt it was for the general public to get tuned into this issue, that we're not going to really make the progress we need to unless it's much more on the public's radar than it has been. And so we've asked them for their involvement and support in this effort, and we will follow up with them, and hopefully we will get a favorable response, at least from some of those funds, if not all of them. And the community action agencies have expressed a willingness to work with the initiative funds in that effort, to cooperate with them, collaborate with them in that effort, and so hopefully we'll get some more things happening here. So as you can see from what we talked about today, things are happening. And that's what we want to make sure we continue to do, make some things happen. Anything else that anybody wishes to bring up or discuss?
I would say that, Mr. Chairman, is this task force, because it doesn't have any authority or any formal structure or anything else, it's the kind of thing that just nobody pays attention to much, but I mean, just looking at some of the things that are happening out of this, I mean, if like that financial literacy planning, somebody taking a look at it came out of it, I mean, I haven't served in any part of that. I'm just kind of watching from a distance and saying, wow, good things happening. Yep. So thanks to the chairs and the staff and everybody involved.
Thank you. If there are no other questions or discussion, stay in touch. Thank you. Yes. We're adjourned. Good. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for doing that tomorrow.
Keeps me busy.
Yeah.
About 13.